Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio, I'm so happy we're back online now. I've checked it out myself, and even if we weren't, we're going out loud and clear on Liberty News Radio. If you clip in there and listen live, but we're transfers and shifting gears. The third hour is going to be the Bitter Ender himself. He's been fighting behind enemy lines for 2 or 3 weeks. My God, I don't know how many. He had to come back because he ran out of swords. He keeps turning the damn swords up. So we have to have new swords made. Hell, it's running us broke, man. We're having to borrow money to buy swords for the Bitter Ender. And we also have the Bell Cow hanging on. She's going to be teaming up with the Bitter Ender. We're talking about, we missed General Nathan Bedford Forrest's birthday several weeks ago. So we're going to cover that tonight. But before Sister Monica goes, I asked her if she would, to tell you people, she's one of us. She's our blood. She wants to tell you, and I ask her to what she's going to be covering on her radio program tonight before she's in a hurry, but she came in on her own time and helped us out tonight. So go ahead, Sister Monica. Tell us all about how to listen to what you're going to be talking about, and give us all the who, what, and whens.
Well, I have so much gratitude to you, Eddie, for inviting me to do that, to talk about it, because, well, that's just very, very... very generous of you to.
Well, you're my baby sister. Well, hell yes, you're my sister.
And we got to cross pollinate too, because you know it's wonderful to find more sources where you can learn a lot of stuff. So, I'm on republicbroadcasting.org. That's where you find it, and that is a really great, you know, free speech network, online network, and they do archive everything as well. I have a new show there. It's called The Flip Side with Monica. It's every Saturday at 5 p.m. Pacific, so that would be 8 p.m. Eastern or 7 p.m. Central, I guess. And then the hour before me is a guy named Frederick C. Blackburn. He goes by Blackbird 9. That's kind of his online moniker. And he has a show called Saturday Snack Shack. And I have learned a lot from that man. He knows a lot. He went from having the highest security clearance that you can have in the United States, but then when 9/11 happened, that all went, because he had the integrity to say, that doesn't work, that doesn't work, that doesn't add up, you know, so it's a usual story like that, but he spoke about those things that he was confronting that didn't make sense, and so that was kind of a big, big, big transformative period of his life. And so we're going to do a doubleheader today. I'm going to be his guest on his Snack Shack show, which starts right after your show, Eddie. So people can go over there, republicbroadcasting.org. And then after his hour, he's going to be my guest. So we're doing a bit of a doubleheader. So at that, I would like to leave you to it, because you have a lot of great and interesting things to talk about, Gene and Nancy and yourself. So thank you very much for this little promo.
You're very much, very welcome. And people that can't get enough of Miss Monica, she has another. You're going to hear her for two more hours tonight. And I appreciate you coming in. Monica and Sister Nancy took the wheel while I was working with our webmaster to get us back
and
up.
And what a great webmaster you do have, Eddie.
He's the best on the face of the earth.
Wonderful, wonderful.
We're blessed
to
have him.
Bye-bye,
well, thank
then.
You so much. Bye-bye now. Well, bye-bye. People, we're transferring over, and I've pretty much done my thing. So we're the Bitter Ender, and she's taking the wheel. And Sister Nancy, they worked so good together. I told her, I asked her to lay in the weeds and contribute as needed. So, how you been doing tonight? Bitter Ender, you've been out for a while, brother.
Oh, yes. Sorry, had to bail out on you a couple of times, but we were working. We weren't just laying around. Last weekend, we were down at Pat Godwin's Forrest birthday celebration at her home farm outside of Selma, Alabama. It's called Fort Dixie. And they have a lot of speakers and musicians there celebrating Forrest's birthday. And it's really a great Confederate event. It's so many people are like-minded like us and our listeners on Blood River Radio that appreciate our history and want to try to protect and preserve our history. And all the money they made from a silent auction and a live auction and donations and things go to take care of the Confederate cemetery in Selma, Alabama, and the forest statue that's there at that cemetery. And, you know, that was Forrest's last battle in the war in April of 1865. He was trying to defend Selma from being attacked by Wilson's cavalry, and they wanted to destroy the arsenals and all the foundries and everything that were making military equipment there in Selma. And so that was why they honored Forrest there. That was his, like I said, his last battle during the war was there at Selma, Alabama. And, of course, they had to move the bust of Forrest and the statue. Oh, my, the local Aborigines got all upset about that. And when they moved it out to the Confederate cemetery, one of the local, civil rights activists or just total a-holes, whatever you want to call them, came out there and stood in the ditch where they were digging a footing and refused to get out of the way for the backhoe to work. Did everything they could to harass Pat and the people that were working out there. It's just, you know, so typical of how petty and how childish these people can be. But we're supposed to embrace a mugging, looting, and killing day and Black Hysteria Month and Juneteenth and all the nonsense they come up with, but then they don't allow us to have our history, and they do everything they can to destroy it. So that's kind of off the subject today, but anyway, it was great for Pat to let us come down there and set up a table, and we sold a lot of items for the Forrest Home to help the work we do up there in Chapel Hill, Tennessee. So anyway, what we were talking about, and if this is still okay with you, we had mentioned earlier that we were going to have a program on our Confederate Hour on General Nathan Bedford Forrest, and it fell on the 13th of July this year, that Saturday did, which was Forrest's birthday, July 13th, 1821. But I think some of our production staff, they had already gone out, made plans to go around the country and celebrate Forrest's birthday, and we weren't able to get our program on that Saturday. So, which is good. They did a good thing there. I wouldn't criticize them for that at all. So if it's still okay with you, that might be, and Nancy, and we can start on that today and talk a little bit about the liberal prostitutes in the lamestream media hate the South, and we know that. And they tell nothing but lies about our history. They have a one-mind concept about our war for Southern independence, that it was all over slavery. And they refuse to read or study the facts about how it was a war over money, that Lincoln wanted the tariffs or taxes against the South. And Lincoln even said that the South could stay out. The Southern states had seceded, the first seven, could stay out. They could keep their slaves if they paid their taxes to the U.S. government, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would we pay taxes to a foreign government? So anyway, they've done nothing but lie about our history. And like the Taliban, they want our history destroyed. They've destroyed Monument Avenue in Richmond, which at one time was one of the most beautiful streets and boulevards in America, and tore down the statues of Lee, Jackson, Jeb Stuart, Matthew Murray, and just to get rid of our history. So they don't have an example held up in front of their worthless faces and their incompetency of what real men and real women used to be like, when we had our own country and when we had really patriotic people that stood up and defended the original Constitution and defended Southern heritage and Southern history and defended the Southern people. That's exactly what they were doing. These soldiers in the Confederate Army put their lives and their bodies in between a brutal, sadistic enemy that was invading the South and stood in the front of that army to defend their homes and their wives and children and everything that was important in the South. They tore down the Reconciliation Monument at Arlington Cemetery. So I guess they don't want to reconciliate with us. So I guess, you know, the next step is to declare war against the evil empire or destroy the evil empire if they don't want to reconciliate. But the one they really go after with the most venom and the most hatred is Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest. And mm-hmm. There are a lot of reasons about that. Number one, he never lost a battle while he was in total command of the field and with all of his troops on the field. Now, he lost some where there was other infantry assigned to him, or he was under the command of someone else that lost the battle. But if he was in total charge of the field and totally with his 100% of his troops, he never lost. So they hated that. So the anti-forest propaganda actually began way back in 1864. This is before the war was over. Forrest was the first Confederate leader to be the victim of a racial hoax. And we're used to all these racial hoaxes today about George Floyd and the Duke lacrosse team and the Gen of Six and all that idiotic nonsense. But they turned it on him in 1864. So we'll go into some of Forrest's life and some of the details of what has happened after our break.
Be right back. I can't wait to hear. General Forrest is very dear to my heart because his headquarters right here in Memphis before the war, we had a park named after General Forrest. Talk about that as soon as we come back, folks. Hang on your seats.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I enjoy this hour so much. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is Gene's hour. You know, I could just be
going out there. I'm on the B team. Y'all are the starters. I'm in the AAA Farm Club. Y'all are in the bigs.
Well, if you're on the B team, I'm the water boy. That's for damn sure. But I'd just like to briefly comment about that, too. General Nathan Bedford Forrest is always, even when I was a kid, very dear to my heart, very dear to most Memphians that were, I'd say, 60 years old or older, because we came up, you know, General Forrest was one of our heroes. It was in our blood, in our DNA. He was a traitor here in Memphis. And, of course, I'm going to defer to Gene and tell us all about that history. But Memphis was General Forrest territory before the war started. But anyway, yeah. I just like to say, General Forrest, God bless you. Happy birthday. Though it's belated. And I'm going to turn it back to you. Take over, Bitterender. Tell us all about our beloved
hero. All of our Confederate soldiers were our heroes. Sam Davis, the boy hero of the Confederacy. Forrest Lee, Patrick Claiborne, the Irish-born general, Admiral Raphael Sims from Mobile. All of these people were our heroes. And now I'm sitting here under the probably one of the worst inventions that ever hit the South, air conditioning, because it cooled off our buildings and all the Yankees moved down here, and all they want to do is change everything in the South. I like air conditioning, but if I had the choice between air conditioning and keeping our Southern history, I wish they'd never invented air conditioning and we could keep our Southern history. That's my take on what all's going on. So anyway, back to General Forrest. Like I said, there were so many lies that had been told about him. And you have to look back at Dr. Goebbels, the National Socialist Party in Germany, and he came up with a great quote. He said, "A lie told once is always a lie, but a lie told 1,000 times becomes history." And basically, that's what has happened to our Confederate history. Our enemies have taken over the government. Well, our enemies were always in the government in Washington, but they've taken over that, the news media, and so many cowardly politicians that we have in the South now that just knuckle under to the pressure from these minorities and these whiners and complainers that have moved in here. And they've destroyed our Southern history in every city in the South. So it's hard. So I think today what we will do is try to give our listeners the truth about the general that you spoke about from Memphis and how he was so revered in the South and still is by many Southerners. But not by the national, not by the media, not by our cowardly politicians, and certainly not by the minorities that are always looking for some kind of crutch to hobble around on. So the truth is, Nathan Bedford Forrest was born to William and Miriam Beck Forrest in the small frontier town of Chapel Hill, Tennessee, on July 13, 1821. From that little town, he moved out in 1830. His father bought a house that was built by the Mayfields in 1825. And in 1830, William moved the Forrest family to this home outside of the town of Chapel Hill, which today is owned, maintained, and restored by the Sons of Confederate Veterans, the Forrest Boyhood Home, which is open to the public. And we have had a lot of visitors that have come through there to see this boyhood home where Forrest lived, which is the only house that Forrest lived in that's still standing and still on its original location. So the Forrest family lived there from 1830 to 1833, and then they moved down to northern Mississippi. And when Bedford was 16, his father died, and all they know is he died of a fever. So at 16, Bedford Forrest was the oldest male in the family of a widowed mother and five other children, and these people were just absolutely dirt poor. He had to work making moccasins and clothes for the other children. He worked with his uncle in Hernando, Mississippi, and got in a shootout one day on the main street in Hernando. The Matlock brothers had a feud with his uncle, and they were coming up the street, and one of the brothers whipped out a gun and shot his uncle dead right in front of him. And Bedford pulled out a pistol and shot him, and the other Matlock brother reached for a pistol, and Bedford's gun jammed and didn't fire. The cap wouldn't fire. And he was about to be shot by this other brother, and somebody in the crowd threw him a Bowie knife. And he went after this other brother with a Bowie knife and chased him off. And the overseer was with him, and he started running too. He figured, these two fellows aren't paying me enough money to take on this wild teenager. So he got out of there. So he worked very hard. In 1846, he volunteered, and they were living in Mississippi, and he volunteered and joined the Mississippi Volunteers to go to Texas. They went down to New Orleans. They paid for a steamboat passage down to New Orleans. One of the people they were with took off with a lot of their money, and they pooled all the money they had left to transport them over to Galveston. And by the time they got there, they told them, no, the regular military is going to fight the war. We don't need the volunteer units anymore. So they were stuck in Texas and no way to get back home to Mississippi. So Forrest had to stay down there and work for 6 months splitting rails for fences for 50 cents a hundred. And that's
100.
Yes, that is hard work. And the bad thing about it, he caught malaria, yellow fever, and by the time he got back to Mississippi, he was almost dead. And his mother had to nurse him for another 6 months to get him back to health where he could at least just stand up. So he almost gave his life for Texas independence. And then you have the cowardly politicians today like Tubby Teddy Cruz that went on a rant about Forrest because the governor of Tennessee issued a proclamation honoring Bedford Forrest's birthday on the 13th of July. What's he do every year? Well, the governor of Tennessee issues about 10 or 12 proclamations for Davy Crockett, for Sergeant Alvin York, for Andrew Jackson, for all sorts of Tennesseans, Elvis Presley, Minnie Pearl, Dolly Parton. They always issue some kind of proclamation on their birthday, but Cruz comes out and yaps and whines about that. And then he said, oh, when he was a delegate to the 1868 Democratic Convention. Well, yeah, dummy, because at that time the Democrats were the conservative party. So I wrote him a letter, yes, and I said, listen, Tubby Teddy, Forrest laid his life on the line for Texas independence. And what have you ever done? Have you ever laid your life on the line for Texas other than ducking out of Texas when it got too cold and you took off down to Mexico? And when the power failure hit Texas and all that big ice and snowstorm you had, have you ever done anything like that for Texas? And of course he wouldn't answer it. One of the staff sent some goofball letter back, said, well, you need to take this up with your local representative. And well, it wasn't our local representative that said that, it was the senator from Texas. But anyway, that's the type of cowardly politicians we have today. So anyway, that was Forrest's early life. He worked hard. He became a successful businessman, got married. Marianne Montgomery was his wife. Interesting way they met. Marianne and her mother were out in a carriage, and they were trying to cross a creek, and it got stuck. And the black fellow that was driving it couldn't get the carriage out of this, lodged in the mud in this creek. And there were two so-called gentlemen that were sitting over on the opposite bank laughing at him, wouldn't get in there and help him. Forrest came up, picked up the white, waded out, got both the ladies, carried them out of the creek, set them on the bank, and then helped the black driver get the carriage out and got them back there. And he went back and asked, wow, if he could meet this young lady. And his Marianne's father was dead set against him because he had a bad reputation as a gambler and all sorts of things. He said, why would you want to be with my daughter? And he said, because she could make a better man out of me. And they wound, wow, up getting married. So anyway, he had a lot of businesses. By the time the war came along and had and made money in livestock and farming and real estate, he was worth about $1.5 million when the war came along in 1861, which today would be about $40 to $55 million in today's money. And, of course, one thing they always throw in his face, that he, oh, Forrest was a slave dealer. Well, okay, they got one out of three things right that they yap about Forrest. They just stumble onto the truth. Yes, he was, but slavery was legal at that time. And his slave quarters always passed inspection there in Memphis by the Board of Health. There were certain people in the tri-state area of Tennessee, Mississippi, and Arkansas he wouldn't sell to because he knew they wouldn't take care of the slaves. He never would break up a family. And he would try to buy back members of a family that had been separated. And this is one thing they will never, ever tell you, that he would let their slaves go out and pick who they wanted to work for. And then he would go to the owner of the plantation and negotiate what the price was. So he finally got out, though, because there was a certain stigma about being a slave dealer. It was okay to own slaves because, you know, slaves back then were the John Deere tractor of their day. And you needed a lot, yes, of people to work the crops in the South. They were very labor intensive, like cotton, tobacco, sugar cane. And if they'd had John Deere tractors, slavery would have been irrelevant. And I had a friend of mine said, yeah, if they'd had John Deere tractors back then, blacks would be irrelevant. So anyway,
yes,
but there's this certain stigma about being a slave dealer, and he didn't want that hanging over his family. So it's like today, rich people want to drive a Mercedes or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, something like that, but they really don't want to hang out with people that work under the hood of a car and have grease under their fingernails from working on car parts. So, yeah, it's okay to drive a fancy car, but they just don't want to hang out with people that actually work on them and make them run for them. So that was the same thing back then. They needed slaves, but dealing in slaves, there was a certain stigma attached to that, and he didn't want that hanging over his children. So anyway, we'll talk about the dictator from the North, and dishonest Abe Lincoln and the war when we come back after the break.
Can't wait to hear it. Be right back, folks.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Summer is upon us and the weather is beautiful. Everyone has a favorite outdoor activity. Golf, bike riding, bird watching, long walks. Ask 100 people and you'll get 100 answers. But if everyday aches and pains are keeping you on the sidelines, I have one answer. Relief Factor. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free daily supplement that helps your body fight pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients. It doesn't just mask pain. It helps reduce or even eliminate it. Wherever you're hurting, back, neck, joints, or muscles, in 3 weeks or less, you'll start to feel the difference all day, every day. So whatever you like to do, swimming, pickleball, hanging out in the garden, Relief Factor can help you feel good again and let you enjoy all your favorite outdoor activities all summer long. ReliefFactor.com, 1-800-4-RELIEF, 1-800-473-5433. Fight pain naturally with Relief Factor.
Monthly jobs report showing hiring cooled in July.
Just 114,000 jobs were added last month.
That's a soft number.
Gus Fauché, who's the chief economist at PNC Financial Services Group.
We have seen a slowing in job growth over the course of 2024. I think this is due to the lagged impact of higher interest rates that we've seen in the U.S. economy over the past few years.
So the scene could be set for interest rate cuts beginning next month.
I think it'll be a quarter of a percentage point in September and then another quarter of a percentage point later this year.
The unemployment rate rose to 4.3%, which is the highest since October of 2021. I'm Shelley Adler.
ExxonMobil's second quarter profits rose, and it was the second highest for the period of the past decade, as it achieved record quarterly production from its Permian and Guyana assets. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. Experts say that air conditioning is no longer a luxury, but it's something that everybody in very hot weather absolutely needs. Texas A&M University scientist Andrew Dessler says it's the people who do not have access to air conditioning who pay the ultimate price in rough and hot weather.
It's people that live the hot life. These are the ones who are dying. People that work outside, people that can't air condition their house, and they have one window air conditioner for their bedroom, that's their air conditioning. And so the rest of their house is really hot. It's really quite grim.
Patricia Solis is the executive director of the Knowledge Exchange for Resilience at Arizona State University. It says heat-related deaths are due to insufficient cooling.
That's because they're exposed to the elements more so than other types of housing.
More on these stories at townhall.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're just doing a little ciphering during the break. You know, back in General Nathan Bedford Forrest Day, he enlisted as a, I think, as a private in the Confederate Army. He was worth $1.5 million. Well, I pointed out, with all my education and all, you know, gold in those days, General Forrest's day, was $20 an ounce. Well, today, the last, it's been going from 2,000 to 20, it hit $2,300 this past week, I've been told by a man of mine, a friend of mine who deals in that stuff. So, if you take $2,300 and divide that by 20, if you take the present cost of gold, 2300, and you divide that by the former cost to go when General Forrest was alive, and multiply that, take that number and multiply that by 1.5 million, you come up with 175.5 million. So General Nathan Bedford Forrest was a rich man, and he sacrificed all of that for the South. And I know the Bitter Ender can tell you all about that a hell of a lot more than I can. So go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Thank you, Eddie, mathematical there. My math pretty much ended at the third grade, adding, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's about all I do, and barely do that, even balance my checkbook. So thank you very much for giving us that information. So that was a lot more than the stats I was going by from several years ago, about 55 million. He was over 100 million. So that really proves how wealthy he was. And just like you said, he sacrificed every bit of that for the cause for Southern independence. And because he was, by the time he died, he was so poor, he was having to live on his brother's farm on an island out in the Mississippi River and had absolutely nothing left. And what little he did have after the war, he spent it for the widows and orphans of the troops that fought under his command. So he gave away what little bit he did have after the war was over to take care of those people that were in a lot worse shape than what he was. So this is the type of person that used to be hero to everyone in the South. And now we have a foreign culture, a degenerate culture of perverts and criminal minorities forced upon us, and have our Southern heroes and what they did destroyed and taken off the public domain. And it's just really sickening, and thank you for that information. We appreciate it, just to show have fallen. So we were talking about, before the break, the war coming along with Lincoln's election and sending a fleet into Charleston to try to provoke a war. And Lincoln said he needed a war, and he needed to get the South to fire the first shot. So Forrest, actually, there was a referendum in Tennessee in February about Tennessee leaving the Union and joining the Confederate government in Montgomery, and Forrest actually voted against secession. He thought it was bad for business. And then after Lincoln called for troops to invade the South in April of 1861, Tennessee had a second referendum, and this time it passed overwhelmingly to leave the Union and join the new Confederate States of America. And what Lincoln did with that call for troops, he drove six more states out of the Union and over to the Confederacy. So Forrest, just like you said, he, as rich as he was, he didn't walk in and say, oh, I want a high rank in the Army or I want a big political office. He enlisted as a private, a 40-year-old private. And I'm sure that in Captain White's company that he joined as a private, those young teenagers probably called him Pops or Grandpa or something like that, or the old man. They didn't do it for very long, though. It wasn't. He knew Governor Isom G. Harris, the governor of Tennessee, and Governor Harris gave him a commission as a lieutenant colonel to raise a battalion of cavalry, which he did, and he paid for with his money. He paid for the horses, the saddles, the tack, the uniforms, the equipment, everything they needed. Forrest paid for it. Confederate government didn't have the money to pay for it. And he was in the Army of Tennessee and fought in some of the major battles that the Army of Tennessee fought out here in the, what they call the Western Theater of the War. He was at Fort Donelson, at Shiloh, his West Tennessee raid. And here's the thing about Forrest. He stopped Union generals Grant, Buell, Sherman, and Rosecrans. He stopped all of their armies at one time or another during the course of the war, but he never fought them head to head. He didn't have the men. He never had more than about 3,000 to 5,000 men. And right at the end of the war, they under John Bell Hood, he had 9,000. But most of the time during the other 4 years of the, 3 years of the war, he only had about 3,000 to 5,000 men. And what he would do, he'd swing around these large armies, cut their supply lines, tear up railroad tracks, cut telegraph lines, burn their supply depots, and force Grant in his first campaign against Vicksburg was coming right through down through central Mississippi. And Forrest took out the Mobile and Ohio Railroad in West Tennessee and forced Grant to turn around and go back to Memphis. He stopped Buell by going behind him. Buell was headed to Chattanooga to take out that vital rail junction. Forrest swung around behind him, captured Murfreesboro on his 41st birthday, and tore up the tracks, cut his supply line. Buell had to turn around, scurry back up to Nashville, and hide out in the fortifications around Nashville. He stopped Sherman. Sherman was, after the fall of Vicksburg, Sherman was going across Mississippi into Alabama and destroy the arsenals at Selma. And Forrest took out Sherman's cavalry, and Sherman waited at Meridian, Mississippi for several days. His cavalry never showed up. Sherman wasn't about to go out in the countryside with no cavalry protection, and Sherman turned around, scurried back to Vicksburg. So he knew how to fight the war. Sherman actually said toward the end of the war, after Forrest was raiding into West Tennessee and destroyed the Yankee supply depot at Johnsonville on the Tennessee River, Sherman said, "Forrest must be killed or captured, even if it costs 10,000 lives and bankrupts the treasury." So, unfortunately, the enemy was more appreciative of what Forrest could do than the Confederate government. If the Confederate government had listened to Forrest and some of the things he proposed to fight these large armies that were coming into the South, we may have won this war or drug it on so long that the North would get tired of it and grant us our independence. But the Confederate government couldn't see what Forrest was doing, but Sherman and Grant and Lincoln and Halleck, they were deathly afraid of Forrest and what he was able of doing. So that was his military career. One of the other big lies that's always told about Forrest, and they repeat this forever on the lamestream news media, that Forrest was responsible for the Fort Pillow massacre. He massacred the poor Negroes at Fort Pillow, which is over on the Mississippi River. And they never tell you the full story. He offered the fort a chance to surrender not once, not twice, but three times, and he was refused. The blacks were drunk. They had been given whiskey by the white officers, the Yankee officers in Fort Pillow, because they didn't think the blacks would fight. And they gave them whiskey to build up their courage. And during one of these truces, when they were trying to negotiate a surrender for the fort, the blacks were up on the earthen wall of this fort shouting all kind of vulgar insults and vulgar signs at the Confederates out there, which was not really smart. The Confederates are already upset enough with the black and white troops coming out of Fort Pillow and attacking the white civilians in West Tennessee. And that's why Forrest went to Fort Pillow. It was because the civilians asked him to do something about these war criminals that were coming out, robbing them and attacking the women in West Tennessee. And Forrest had gone into West Tennessee and Western Kentucky in March and April of 1864 to go after horses. They weren't going to Fort Pillow. They could care less what happened over there until the civilians asked him to do something about Fort Pillow. And that's why he sent one of his cavalry divisions under James Chalmers over there to take out Fort Pillow. But he gave them a chance to surrender. They were shouting insults at them. And finally, when they refused, he sent his men over the earthen wall in the fort to clean it out. And if he ordered a massacre, he didn't do a very good job. He took out 200 prisoners. They left another 130 behind with the federal or U.S. medical staff that were too seriously wounded to be moved, and they did kill 230 out of the 557 or whatever it was that was that were there at Fort Pillow, but he did not order a massacre. In fact, he came into the fort about 15 or 20 minutes after the initial assault and ordered the flag to be cut down, because as long as the Yankee flag was flying, that meant the fort hadn't surrendered. So he ordered the flag cut down, which showed that the battle was pretty much over, and it did wind down after that. But there was so much confusion and going on down below the bluff there on this river road. Who knows what all went on down there? He couldn't go down there and straighten out every single thing that happened. So anyway, that was a lot of Forrest's military career. And like we mentioned earlier, his last battle was in April of 1865 down near Selma, Alabama. Now, the other thing that they always throw against Forrest, the other big lie, well, Forrest started the Ku Klux Klan. Well, no, that's another lie that the news media and the South haters always come up with. The Klan was actually started in Pulaski, Tennessee. It's down in Giles County, almost to the Alabama state line. And it was six former Confederates that started it. And we'll give you the history of that and how Forrest was not a part of that.
I got to make a comment about that soon we come back. Can't wait to get back to the bitter ender, our history professor on Blood River Radio. Be right back, folks.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we've been having some problems tonight. I've just been told by several people, James being one of them, and that we've been having some. I think we got Blood River Radio website fixed fine, but now we're having some Liberty News Radio, some kind of streaming problem, which I do not understand. Me and the bitter ender, we're kind of like we don't have enough of a technical education. But anyway, you just be patient. The archives will be up. And the good thing about this, no matter how crappy the streaming is and stuff like that, our archives are usually always just pristine. So I know I love people. I like to listen to it live. But if you can't, our archives will be up tomorrow. They always have been. But I'd like to respond also. Some of the detractors of General Nathan Bedford Forrest said, oh, he started the Ku Klux Klan. I said, well, I'm so damn glad you noticed, because you know what? You're one of your stinking Jew guys started the SPLC and the ADL and the Irgun and the terrorist organizations over there that in Palestine that later became the IDF, and they were the ones responsible for sinking the USS Liberty, blowing up the King David Hotel, and assassinating like Sister Nancy said on the first, on the second hour of the show, they've assassinated thousands of people, probably. They kill these Jews. They kill just with impunity and with the United States government's a blessing. So the Ku Klux Klan, hell yeah. I'm a proud member of the Ku Klux Klan, by God. And you know what? Something else. One of those sons of bitches up at Montgomery Bell one time screamed out when we were up there, "Hey, you must be a neo-Nazi." I said, "Hell no, I'm not a sissy ass neo-Nazi. I'm the real by God Nazi. My grandfather was Herman." Herman friggin' Goring. Stick that up your butt. Anyway, don't want to talk too much. You're damn right. I'm a Klansman and hardcore Nazi, so hell, say something about that, you sons of bitches. Anyway, back to you, General. I wouldn't get too carried away. Hoping to turn our Christian brothers away.
you're too timid there, Eddie. Why don't you just say what you really want to say sometimes?
One of these days I'm going to, by God. I got to get me a snort of good old scotch and get you Kentucky bourbon. I'm going to cut loose, buddy.
I want to dig a hole in the ground and hide if you cut loose. It's going to be bad.
Well, anyway, we got a more educated brother on right now. Go ahead, history professor, and carry on.
So, after the war, and our South-hating enemies and the news nerds that never study history, they just, the news readers, I call them, they put up anything, they read anything that's up on the teleprompter. You know, if it said, "I am a stupid commentator," you know, they'd read that off because they don't know anything except what they put up there in front of their face. So they always say that Forrest started the Ku Klux Klan, which is a lie. The Klan was started in Pulaski, Tennessee, and Forrest went back to his home in Memphis after the war. In December of 1865, there were six former Confederate soldiers that started an organization that was not a political organization. It was like a soldier's organization, like the American Legion or the VFW or something like that. And they always get mad when I say that, but I said, no, the original Klan, you're not listening. The original Klan had no political ties whatsoever. And they used to have a plaque on a building down in Pulaski that was the original law office where these six boys met and started this organization, or it's kind of like a fraternity, really.
Yeah.
But they've taken that plaque down now. They're so scared down there, too. And the idea was that they just had something to do. I mean, the South was destroyed economically. They couldn't afford to go to a circus or a minstrel show or a concert or anything like that, so they had to entertain themselves. So they got their mom or their sister to make them these outlandish costumes, and they'd ride around at night and say they were ghosts from the Battle of Shiloh and all kind of nonsense. Everybody knew it was a big joke, but they'd always ride by their girlfriend's house, and she would pretend to be scared and faint, and she'd always faint and fall into her boyfriend's arms. So, you know, everybody knew it was a joke until the Reconstruction government got so bad. And they passed the Franchise Act in Washington. And the Confederate soldiers were lied to. They said if they'll lay down their arms and not take up arms against the United States government and follow the laws, then they would be returned to their citizenship rights. Well, they did. They thought they could trust the Yankee government, the Washington government. So they believed that they were doing the right thing, and they were going to, if they quit fighting, which they did, that they would be returned to normal citizens. Well, that didn't last. They passed the Franchise Act, which meant that any Southerner that was in the Confederate military or even aided the Confederacy, if I saw old Eddie, he sold a bag of corn to Bedford Forrest Cavalry when they came through, then you lost your right to vote along with former Confederate soldiers. So that meant you couldn't vote for sheriff, you couldn't vote for tax assessor, and that's where all these rich people like the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the J.P. Morgan and all these people came south and bought up millions of acres. Hilton Head Island, for instance, all those resorts they built on Hilton Head, they bought Southern land at pennies on the dollar and basically just stole it. And that's what was going on. And so since the white Southerners couldn't protect themselves, the blacks in the Freedmen's Bureau and the Yankee carpetbaggers that came down here after the war had a field day going after whites. And once again, the white women, shows you how brave they are. They're real brave when the Confederate Army was disarmed and they could go after women. That tells you what kind of enemy we were fighting against. And so they had to form vigilante groups to protect themselves. And it wasn't just the Klan. In South Carolina, it was the Red Shirts. In Texas and Louisiana, it was the Knights of the White Camellia. But in southern Middle Tennessee and northern Alabama, the Klan turned from just this fraternal organization into a political organization to go basically not after the blacks, but after the whites in the Reconstruction government that were causing all of these problems and trying to get our vote back so we could at least vote to put people in office that could defend us. And Forrest was not head of the Klan. And as a white man, he probably was a member of it. And most white male, Southern males had to be to protect their family, to protect their homes, and once again, especially to protect the women in the South from these vulgar animals that were just running rampant all over the South and going and doing pretty much whatever they wanted to do, and then run back to the federal soldiers that were stationed in the South and hide under the Yankee flag, and nobody could do anything about it because the government was taken over by our enemies. And so what could you do? It was like the Allies coming in and taking over Germany after the war and do whatever they wanted to do to the German people, and the German civilians couldn't do anything about it. So the same thing was happening to the Southerners after the war. And it lasted for 12 years. The war was only 4 years. And there were parts of the South that the war never came to, that areas of the South that weren't on a major river or a railroad, where if you look at a map, that's where most of the battles were fought. But there were places that were way away from these battle sites, now came under the iron boot heel of the Yankee Reconstruction government, and they were stealing their farms and their homes and taking whatever they wanted to, and the Southerners had no recourse. There was nobody to turn to. So, of course, they had to establish their own vigilante groups to protect themselves. And Forrest wasn't head of it. They know now it was a former Confederate general, George Gordon, that was probably head of it, at least in this part of the country, because they have letters from his wife that are in the library at Cumberland University in Lebanon, Tennessee, that say that. But it was a secret organization. The Yankee government, if they just accused you of being in the Klan, they could shoot you right on the street. No trial, no nothing, no charges or anything. They see, well, I saw Eddie walking down the street there. I think he's in the Klan. Whip out a pistol, bam. That's the end of Eddie right there. And you had no trial, no nothing, no way to defend yourself. So that was the type of government that people in the South were living in during that 12 years of Reconstruction. So it lasted from the end of the war up until the presidential election of 1876. And it would have gone on even longer, but the Yankees couldn't even steal an election and get it stolen right. So they had to make a deal that they would give the electoral votes. And I think it was either Garfield or I've forgotten. Well, Samuel Tilden was the Democratic candidate. I know that. He actually won the vote. But there were three states where the Electoral College was so crooked and messed up by the occupation army, they couldn't even steal the election. So they said, okay, we'll give it to the Republican candidate, since the Republicans controlled Congress, if you agree to get the troops out of the South. So they agreed to that. The Republican candidate got the election in 1876, and the troops were withdrawn from the South 12 years after the war was over. They finally got the iron boot heel off our neck down here, but the South was just totally destroyed. It took over 100 years for the South to get back on its feet economically and rebuild the railroads, the infrastructure, and everything that had been destroyed in the war. And what wasn't destroyed in the war was stolen in those 12 years of Reconstruction after the war was over. As far as destroying the Southern economy and people's homes and lives, probably Reconstruction was even worse than the war itself, unless you actually lost somebody, a husband, a father, brother, son, or somebody like that was killed in the war. As far as the economic destruction of the South, the Reconstruction period, that 12 years was certainly worse than the war itself was, because the war, like you said, only hit in certain parts of the South where these battles were fought along railroads and rivers where the armies moved back and forth. So, and then that's also why the Republican Party was so hated in the South after the war.
Gene, you did a marvelous, marvelous job. You know, I'd just like to comment, it's pretty much the same thing that's happened to the same people. I always consider our Confederate brothers with their double first cousin, with the Wehrmacht soldiers and the Waffen-SS. And, you know, I've been told that more people in Germany, more Germans died after the war than they did from bullets during the war. So it's the same people doing the same thing. Well, God bless you, Bitterinder, for coming in and giving such a marvelous history lesson. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I really, really did. I know all of our people do, too. I'd like to thank you, Miss Lizzie, for running the flawless board. People were having a little trouble going out tonight, but it's going to be they're working on it right now. Well, our staff's working on it, so hang in there. We'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.